Compton & Company, brought to you by United Rentals on 1010XL. Here's your host, Ron Compton.
And good afternoon. Welcome to the Ale House in Tinseltown. It is Compton & Company. Glad to have you along with us, talking sports with you for 2 hours. Come on, say hello to us. Baseball, softball, basketball, you name it. It's all happening here. NBA playoffs, the real playoffs, start today. We had this play-in stuff that's gone down. It's come and gone. As a fan of the Atlanta Hawks, well, I knew it was happening there. And how about both the Pelicans and the Heat both getting wins last night to advance without Zion Williamson and Jimmy Buckets. But yeah, so we've got the FSU spring game today. We've got the NFL draft upcoming Thursday. We'll have a late arriving Chuck Elliott. But first, let me welcome back to the show, if it's just for a week, because he may be sitting in for Casey Dobson. I'm not sure, but our buddy RJ Saunders, who you can hear every day producing. But he reminded me, RJ, you said that you think your very first show you ever produced was one of our shows on a Wednesday night.
Absolutely, yeah. They had me on the AM side producing your guys' show each and every week, and that's how I really cut my teeth to get more confident with being behind a board and also listening and getting an understanding of live radio. So to be back doing this show, because we also did this for a few months together before I had left for Texas. A few months together, I was a Saturday producer before Casey took over. So this brings back fond memories. I'm happy to be on.
Hey, happy to have you back with us, man. Yeah, so, you were here, took a trip out to Houston, right? We landed in Houston for a while. Right. And so compare RJ Saunders, the rabidness of the fan bases of the Houston Texans and our Jacksonville Jaguars.
Well, I think that Jacksonville Jaguar fans are – they are what they say they are, Duval till we die. I you know, when it came to Houston, there were many people, even with the drafting of C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson, really didn't think that the team was going to be what they were this past season. So you saw it go from just having maybe half a capacity crowd to now being nearly a full stadium, whereas with Jacksonville, whether good, bad, or indifferent, we may, you know, say – our 2 cents about the team, whether it be negative or positive, but we're still going to support the team either way. Houston, it just felt like, you know, if they're winning, we'll come. If they're losing, we have plenty of other things to do than go to NRG Stadium.
Yeah, you know, and you're right, absolutely. And I'll say this, when Chuck gets here, he and I, we don't agree on a lot. And obviously, you did our show for a while, so you know that. But one thing we do agree on is something you just touched on, man, is I'm looking up right now on the NFL Network, there's there's an old Jaguars game with Blake Bortles as a quarterback.
Wow.
And the Jags, it must be the playoff game against the Steelers. It's funny, we just get them those gold and black helmets. But how about real quick the throwback stuff, the throwback unis. It's coming back this season, which are fan favorites. I'm looking forward to that, as Chuck Elliott has made it to the set here. But I was saying, Chuck, as you were walking up here, as RJ Saunders, and who he reminded me was he cut his teeth doing our show on Wednesday nights and then Saturdays early on in his producing career. But I said, RJ, you know that Chuck and, you know, we don't really agree on a lot. But one thing we do agree on is he was talking a moment ago about, I was asking about the difference in comparing the Houston and Jacksonville fan bases. And one thing we can agree upon, he talked about how, you know, we still get a ton of support here, win or lose. Good times, bad times, there's still a lot of fan support here. And the one thing we can agree on, Chuck, is we both it ticks us off about the lazy national perception and the shots that sometimes the national media takes in our city. Oh, all the tarps, and they don't show up. And you got a perennial what was a perennial losing organization that continues to at least have 50-plus thousand people show up each and every week, and sometimes, you know, you'll get into, you know, into the to 60s or whatever the case may be, whereas people forget just, you know, years ago when there wasn't a lot of options out there. The Green Bay Packers couldn't sell out games, the tradition-rich Green Bay Packers, and they played half their games in Milwaukee, right? And you've had other cities that just didn't sell tickets when teams weren't winning. Far worse situations from a ticket-selling standpoint than there's ever been in Jacksonville.
Well, the only thing I think that the Packers, I mean, that was a deal they had going back. The Packers, they didn't play in Milwaukee because they couldn't sell at Green Bay. That was a deal they had because Milwaukee was the biggest city near Green Bay. So they split that. That was a split season ticket pack. I think you could put like 1983, I believe.
Yeah. But the point is they didn't sell tickets. They still didn't sell tickets. You know, they never sold out. Never, ever, ever. They didn't. They were a poorly ran organization. They were title town and won all these championships. And then when they got bad, the point is, typically, obviously, most people are front runners. When times are good, people show up. When times are bad, they don't.
Right.
Well, in Jacksonville, when times are bad, for the most part, people will still show up. And that doesn't typically happen in most cities.
Yeah, yeah. That's everybody.
That's the point.
Everybody's like that. I mean, if you want to, which I think they do, if you want to be hard on a fan base, be hard on the Chargers or Rams fan base. You know, they got a nice new stadium in the second largest market in the country, and they don't show up that well for the team. They don't care. I mean, L.A. doesn't. If L.A. didn't have, I mean, L.A. had a team, went without a team for what, 95, 96 until 16 or 17, and they were fine with it.
What's funny that the city of Los Angeles, the residents, they didn't want an NFL football
team.
They'd rather have the good games,
the best game of the week
every week, and then they got stuck with that crap.
Yeah. Well, they got a Super Bowl out of the Rams.
No, I get it. I understand they did get a Super Bowl, and what Les Snead said, bleep the draft picks. Remember the T-shirts? You don't want to give up on the first rounders to go win that Super Bowl.
But if you think in retrospect, it's amazing they went that many years of Los Angeles without an NFL team. That's crazy to think about now.
So
now they got two.
RJ Saunders, throw our poll questions out. We'll touch on them briefly, break, and then come back and delve into them a little more deeply. So tell folks what's on what we have today. This is sponsored by All Site Contracting.
Absolutely. All you have to do is search at 1010XL, and we have two poll questions up for you to discuss and decide and give us your feelings here on Compton & Company. First one being, do you think FSU will keep things rolling, take a small step back, or go all the way to being an average team? Right now, it's a draw at 36.6%. Fans believe that they'll either, A, take a small step back, or they'll be average once again. And then our bonus question of the day: if you are a member of the Jacksonville Jaguars, which one of these players would you take with the 17th overall pick? Would it be Terrion Arnold, Brian Thomas, Brock Bowers, or the best O-lineman available? And right now, leading the way with 37% of the votes, Ron, they're going with Terrion Arnold as the pick.
Okay, the Alabama corner. Okay, and actually, Terrion Arnold played all over in that secondary, but would come in and play corner. If he were there and happened to be the pick. So that's so who the other three fall in line as far as our receiver and Bowers and offensive lineman.
So surprisingly, Bowers is last with only 18% of the votes. If not Terrion Arnold being the pick at 17, many would prefer Brian Thomas, who currently holds the second slot, or the best O-lineman available, which has been a big conversation here throughout the week, including with your show, of should we think about protecting Trevor? Should that be the main thing? Or getting him the best receiver available so that he can have a nice target to throw to?
Well, look, I would say this, and we'll delve into it when we come back, and we'll discuss the Jaguars and the draft first up after the break. But I'll hearken back to I remember the quote from the original Longest Yard when Burt Reynolds is – now, I'm sure, RJ, you've seen the remake, the reboot
Yeah, with Adam Sandler.
The Adam Sandler, right? And that was, I love that. I mean, it was a little more funny than the original. But as the movie itself, I like the original a little more, I guess, a little old school. Did you ever see the original one?
I didn't see the original one.
Okay.
I think
you should watch
bits and pieces.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good watch. But Burt Reynolds, when he's out, he has all the inmates, and he's very first practice, he goes, the number one objective when we go play these games or this game is to protect your quarterback. I mean, that's what he said. I mean, look, if you don't protect the franchise, you can't win, right? You can't win if you can't protect the franchise. So we'll discuss that question first when we come back. We broadcast to you from the L House in Tinseltown on 1010 XL.
Compton and Company on 1010 XL.
And welcome back to Compton and Company, coming to you from the L House in Tinseltown. Oh, I think the address actually Deer Lake Court, I believe. Man, you name it, it's all here. Every sporting event known to man is here. Over 70-plus TVs, outstanding food. I went back to a little blackened salmon with broccoli and salad, Chuck.
Sounds good. I got here. You already eat. I'm like, hey, you got here.
Oh, yeah. It was good. By the time you were here, food was gone. Look, mixed buckets for $19.99. You have Wing Wednesday here, dozen wings, or you can get 24 wings, outstanding wing prices. It's world-famous Zinger Mondays. We're here on Saturdays. Not a better place to hang out with your family or your buddies right here at the old house in Tinseltown. The poll of questions out there, one of which, they're both sponsored by Outside Contracting, is the Jacksonville Jaguars. If you were Trent Baalke, and you were going to go, you get number 17 pick in the draft. Best offensive lineman, Brock Bowers, Terry Arnold, Brian Thomas. Who do you got? And I guess thus far, the consensus is still, I guess, what, Terry Arnold, right? Is that correct, RJ?
Yeah, Terry Arnold leads the way in that poll.
All right, so, and me, I said before the break, I teased with, protect your quarterback. They did address that. And I think it can't really be overstated with the acquisition of Mitch Morse at the center position. Because, the dude, Chuck, you do know the other two quarterbacks that he's been a starting center for, do you not? Do you know?
I do not.
Well, that would be, I don't know, some dude named Mahomes and some guy named Josh Allen. Those are the two quarterbacks that he's snapped the ball to his entire career. Give me that guy as a center making the line calls and snapping the ball to number 16. So I think that it's a lot bigger deal. I think there should be a bigger deal made about that signing than there has been. And to me, it's huge. If he stays healthy, he's had concussion issues in the past, stayed away from them last year. But if that dude stays healthy all 17 games, that's a huge deal. Is it as big a deal as, having like that guy? I always say, what does stud quarterbacks all typically have in common? They've got number 88. They've got number 82, or now you have single digits. They've got number 1. They've got number 0, whomever, whatever numbers. Single-digit numbers or numbers in the 80s. But they have that number 1 go-to, I'm in trouble, I'm going to throw it up to CeeDee Lamb. I'm going to throw it up to Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, whomever, right? He doesn't have that guy. Can Brian Thomas be that guy? I mean, he was the number 2 receiver behind Malik Nabers at LSU. Doesn't mean he can't be a number 1 in the NFL. I would say if you're the Jaguars and you view him as this guy's a number 1 receiver, he's going to line up, he's our guy. Okay, I could. But then again, do I trust Trent Baalke in that evaluation? Not really.
I'll ask you this then, Ron.
Yes. Yep.
Would you consider, because now the reports are swirling again, would you consider trading this pick to San Francisco for Brandon Ayuk?
First round?
Boy,
maybe.
It is a maybe. It's a maybe for me as well.
I think what they wanted, I guess the first go around, the reports were they wanted 17 Zay Jones.
And Zay Jones. Yeah,
and
17
Zay Jones. I guess the asking price was too high for Jacksonville, but now, I mean, do you think by the time we get to the NFL draft, you may call San Francisco and say, hey, is that deal still on the table, and would you consider it, Ron?
Well, this is what I would say is, yeah, and Zay Jones would have to go along with him, because if you were to go bring in another receiver, Zay Jones would be the odd man out. Christian Kirk's going nowhere. Obviously, Gabe Davis, you just signed him as a free agent deal. Those are your dudes. And then, obviously, then you'd have your number one that you would maybe trade for. My thing is, it's not as much giving up number 17 overall pick, is what's the contract going to look like that you're going to have to give Brandon Ayuk? Because I don't look at Brandon Ayuk as a legit, he's a bona fide, he's a number one receiver. I get he may be their number one, but I think his production is certainly skewed a bit because of the attention that's paid to CMC. Right? I mean, and obviously number 19 they have over there, that dude's pretty good too. And then also, you know, George Kittle, right? So, you've got that to me is where I'm like, boy, if he's now the number one dude and he's getting, you know, all the attention, and Debo Samuel and Kittle and CMC aren't there to take up some of the attention – will he have that same type of production?
I guess you can't look at it like this, because you always think, okay, the next draft, we're going to be fine. But other than Trevor Lawrence, overall in general, the Jags don't do great in the first round. So maybe thinking if we trade it, get Ayuk, well, at least we think we have a good player. We can't mess the draft pick up because we traded it.
Yeah.
But I suppose you can't think like that.
Yeah, no, you can't. You can't.
But history is history.
But the problem is what we've discussed here over the last few weeks as well, is when you look at the Jaguars and you look at how the roster is constructed, you know, the way it's supposed to work, and it's going to lead into tie into our FSU question later too, as far as they're building, both FSU and the Jaguars are both building the rosters the wrong way for sustainability. For long-term sustainability, you don't, you know, the way it's supposed to work is, look, the NIL and the portal is like free agency, even more so because they can change teams every year without sitting out. That's a new rule. I don't know if you knew that, Chuck. It used to be in college, you get one mulligan, and then you couldn't transfer again until you graduated. Now the rule is you get every year you go somewhere else. No harm, no foul. So, but the way you build your teams – for sustainability is you recruit and add guys in the portal. Same thing in the NFL. You're supposed to build through the draft, add guys in free agency. Why? Now because the money. Right? When you look at the salary cap and the money you have to keep pushing out there, if the majority of your starting 22 is made up of free agent acquisitions, that's not a good thing, because you don't have a lot of team-friendly contracts. So it's not sustainable. So if you go out, you trade for Brandon Ayuk. Okay, here you go. Okay, you look at as a Cowboys fan, look at salary cap hell they're in right now. Dak Prescott's kind of bent over a barrel. I'd almost tell him to take a leap as a Cowboys fan, and I'll discuss that later too, is why he needs to just take about $40 million a year and be happy. What you want, his agent will tell him not to do that, but I'll discuss that during the show later on. But when you have Dak, you have to pay. Does this sound familiar? You got to pay Dak. You've got to pay CeeDee Lamb. You've got to pay Micah Parsons. Huge contracts. Well, in Jacksonville, you've got to pay Trevor Lawrence. If you go trade for a top-shelf wide receiver and Brandon Ayuk, you've got to pay Brandon Ayuk number one money. He's going $25 million a year. And you just pay Josh Allen. That's a lot of cap space that just three position players or take it up. And you just can't win that way. It's not sustainable, man. You've got to find a way to manage your capital. But in the Dallas Cowboys, saying the Dallas Cowboys, their three guys they've got to pay are all drafted players. They're all drafted players. Their problem was the Joneses mismanaged the way they handled the Dak Prescott contract the first time they re-signed him. Or they wouldn't be in the situation right now. But so that long answer is to your question, RJ, boy, probably not. Not for IU because of the money you'll have to give them. Not the draft capital and the player you'd give up. That's no problem. Would I rather have, if you took the money aside, would I rather have Brandon Ayuk at 17 or Brian Thomas at 17? You damn right, sign me up for Brandon Ayuk all day. But I don't have to pay Brian Thomas $25 million a year over 5 years and $70 million guaranteed.
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to also look at this from the other side for you, Chuck, and you, Ron. When we opened up this segment with talking about having to protect the quarterback, and you hear Trevor Lawrence during the press conference talk about he didn't really feel healthy until March. Should that be something that Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson consider at 17, saying, hey, listen, I understand we may need to get him a receiver. I understand that we may need to look more on the defensive side of the ball, but we have to protect our franchise guy, and we have to make sure that he has enough protection around him in order for him to be able to make those progressions and make the right reads so he can get the ball to the right guys. Should that be something that Trent Baalke and Doug Peterson at least consider? I understand we're talking about, you know, cornerback and Terrion Arnold, or we're talking about Brian Thomas or Malik Nabers, who reportedly they're interested in. But like you said, Ron, shouldn't the most important thing be protecting the quarterback here?
Absolutely, and I would suggest they should. I don't think they will, though. I think in the first three rounds, if they don't do anything else in free agency, because, look, you still have guys out there. Mekhi Becton, a right tackle. Donovan Smith, who plays left tackle. Both, you know, still relatively young. Connor Williams, who played center for the Cowboys and the Dolphins, but has also played guard as well. There's three offensive linemen. You know, Becton is 25 or 26, as is Williams. I think Smith is around 30, played left tackle for the Chiefs. So you've got some offensive linemen still available in free agency. You've got corners, Xavier Howard, J.C. Jackson, Stephon Gilmore. There's corners out there as well. Wide receivers, not as much depth there. Hunter Renfrow, Allen Robinson, OBJ, all around 30. Michael Gallup, he's had injury issues. Tyler Boyd, who subpar play last year when he had a lot of looks because of injuries in Cincinnati, and Michael Thomas, who seems like he's 40, but he's 31. So to me, in the first three rounds, unless you do something here in free agency, even if you do, in some order, receiver, defensive back, or cornerback in offensive line. But this is what I would say. Depending upon what you think between Anton Harrison, Walker Little, and Cam Robinson as your tackles, right? And we just mentioned as far as Mitch Morris at your center position. And then, of course, they right away, you know, they go out and they re-sign Ezra Cleveland in free agency right away. And then, obviously, Brandon Sheriff is still here. So, and then, you know, Cooper Hodges, the kid from Baker County, who they were high on, but he got hurt in camp last year. It really depends on how the Jaguars view those guys I just mentioned inside of that building, right? They're not going to be completely transparent with us. Remember, after the season was over, that maybe we like our unit. We think we're good here. And really, I guess maybe they were transparent because the only thing they did was address the center position. Everything else is status quo along the offensive line. It's tough, right? I mean, yeah, you need to protect your quarterback, but you also need to give him weapons. And the guy that I would take in the first round, if all the guys were there, is the dude that's running DAL in this thing. That's Brock Bowers. If I went offense, Terrion Arnold is. Obviously, I'd be happy if he were still there and they ran up and turned his name in. But, boy, thinking of Brock Bowers gives me Gronkowski, Hernandez vibes again. Two just mismatched nightmares at the tight end position to go along with what you have. Look, think about it. Both he and Evan Engram line up all over the place. They don't just line in tight in the formation. They don't just line out, you know, just as a passing tight end. They'll go out and line up in the X and Y positions at times, right? So that would intrigue me if you had Bowers and Engram to create those types of nightmares for defensive coordinators, because I think of all the guys I just mentioned, Thomas and Arnold and Bowers, that he, to me, is by far and away the guy that I'm convinced is going to be a star in the NFL. Just like when I look at all the quarterbacks, the only one of the four that I would say is, and I think everyone would go along the same lines, is Caleb Williams is the only one that I'm confident is going to be a star amongst all of those. But I don't trust the other ones. I mean, Jaden Daniels, skinny and has that weird looking elbow, and J.J. McCarthy never threw the ball at Michigan. Yes, sure, his combine, he looked great throwing against air, but he wasn't asked to do much at Michigan. They ran the ball over and over and over again, right? I mean, to Blake Corum. And then, of course, Drake May. Maybe this is unfair, but I just get Sam Howell vibes all over again. Sam Howell is going to be like the number one quarterback in the draft, and then he stayed another year and he went down draft boards in North Carolina. Drake May, he's the next in the line of North Carolina quarterbacks. And again, maybe that's unfair to throw him in that mix. But
I think with Caleb Williams, don't you have issues with his dad's going to be like RG3's dad? They're going to be a problem to deal with. I think none of these guys are going to be any good. I think McCarthy,
And history says at least one will
I think Jay Daniels will be fine, but isn't he going to be like Anthony Richardson? He's just going to end up being hurt, correct? He's just going to get walloped.
And Anthony Richardson is a big dude.
Right. Jay Daniels is kind of like the same, but he likes to run around.
He's a runner. Loves to run.
So how long is that going to last? I guess if you had to pick, you'd probably say Caleb Williams be the best, but who knows?
This is why we have jobs, though, Chuck. You get to talk about stuff like this. It's fun to talk about, you know, and speculate. I mean, look, the draft is upcoming.
Isn't it funny? I heard somebody this the other day. I'd hate to think what each NFL team spends on, you know, not recruiting, but research and draft. The quarterback position, there's no way to get it right. They're wrong most of the time. It's something you can't get. You can't get right.
I remember doing draft shows together when we were on Saturday mornings forever, when the draft was held Saturday and Sunday. And I remember the one show we did. It's funny, you remember we did our draft show at the old Mudville Grill and a beach in Atlantic where it comes together.
And where it splits. Yep, Nicholas. St. Nicholas.
Yeah, St. Nicholas, yeah. And I remember sitting in the parking lot on my computer going through stuff, and I remember looking at first-round draft picks. Not like players would be good, bad. It was half the first-round picks historically over the previous 20 years, half of them were complete bust. Complete bust, not okay, half were bust. You had like the three or four that was really good players, a few that were okay, and a few that were good. And that just shows you how much of a crapshoot it really is. It really is. All right, we'll step aside for a break here. We'll come back. Talk about FSU. The second poll question, sponsored by our good friends at Allsite Contracting. By the way, if you look have any roll-off container needs, meaning, you know, say, have a new roof put on the house, heck, you're cleaning out the garage and you want to just throw a bunch of stuff away. What are the reasons? Or you're a contractor and you're looking for a reliable company that has roll-off containers, call my friends at Allsite Contract. Call Amy at 574-9000, 574-9000. If you don't get your container the next day, it's absolutely free of charge. So we'll come back and we'll talk about FSU. They've got their spring game later today. And your thoughts on FSU. Will they, you know, keep on rolling? Will they take a small step back, or will they go back to being average? We'll discuss that. Text lines, phone lines open to you at 641-1010 as well. We broadcast to you from Dick. almost messed up. The old house. The old house. Millhouse. Millhouse, L House. You know, Millhouse was great at the airport a long time ago. doors are closed. Well, it's funny. Remember when we'd say, hey, we don't show at the Mill House? Oh, yeah, I know where that is. Over off Southside Boulevard. I said, no, that's the L House. But now we are at the L House in Tinseltown. And back to more for this on 1010 XL.
This is Compton & Company on 1010 XL.
And welcome back to Compton & Company, coming to you from the L House in Tinseltown. Glad to have you along with us. Phone lines, text lines open to you at 641-1010, 641-1010. Poll questions out there. Are these sponsored by Allsite Contracting for the Jaguars? Picking at 17, your Trent Baalke. Would you take Brian Thomas, Terrion Arnold, Brock Bowers, or the best offensive lineman available? And then the poll question we're going to discuss a link now, Chuck Elliott and R.D. Saunders, is Florida State University. F-L-O-R-I-D-A-S-T-A-T-E.
I tell you what, Ron, you've gone from – some guy here, we've gone from discussing Jaguars draft to FSU. You're hitting all my subjects I just love today. You're playing the hits, I'll
tell
you.
Don't worry. We're going to talk about
– you're playing the hits.
We're going to have a special birthday later. And I can't believe
you sure we can't get any NBA playoff talk in before we go today?
Hey, we will, by the way. We will. Hey, speaking of which, it is 4:20. How much, speaking of the NBA playoffs, the percentage of the NBA players that got out this morning and are celebrating 4:20, R.J. Saunders?
The percentage? Wow.
Yeah.
I would have to say 40%.
Here's another one for you. So your thought, here's one for you, Chuck, because I think you grew up like in the 70s, I think, right?
Well, I was a kid. I was like,
I'm joking.
Well, I was like 12 in the 70s.
All right. So people that were born in the 60s and 70s, the percentage of them that never smoked pot at all, never had themselves a marijuana cigarette, as they called them back in the 70s. No, I had read a joint. What's the percentage of people that grew up in the 60s and 70s, say they were adults in the 60s or 70s, that never smoked?
They were born, you're saying?
Well, if they grew up as an adult in the 60s, and they were a functioning adult in the 60s and or the 70s, what are the percentages of people that never smoked? What would you think?
It's probably pretty high.
Pretty high, you think?
No pun intended.
Okay.
I would say... I think probably 70%. I mean, I think you have this notion that everyone back in the 70s, you know, an adult was
sex,
you know,
drug, just, and rock and roll, right?
Yeah, that's probably.
All right, let me ask you this now.
A lot more now.
I was going to say, the percentages of people that indulge now, what would you say? Now that you can go to your local convenience store, again, whatever, not really a convenience store, your local smoke shop.
You see these vape shops coming.
Oh,
you can't get it there, but they have all these, what do you call them, dispensaries?
Yeah, dispensaries, huh? Yeah, go, hey, you can go get you a card. Anybody can go get a card. Hey, I want a card. Okay, you
now
get
what's
one.
Crazy, you know,
you
that's going
card,
to
you get
be.
You get a card, you get a card.
You know that's going to be on the ballot, right, for the state of Florida to legalize marijuana.
What's that?
Yeah, it's going to be on the ballot.
I know, yeah.
What's odd is... Doesn't that seem like something that shouldn't be? It seems like that should be something that should be a nefarious activity.
Well.
It just seems like being legal would be, you know, I guess because when we grew up, it was like something that was not above the board. And they're trying to make it now, and that just seems odd to me, but I digress.
Well, I would say that I'm all for legalizing it. The reason I would say that is I remember going to a me and my ex-wife, and you're like, go ahead and say it.
One or two?
Two.
Oh, okay.
Number two. We went to the Comedy Zone, and there was the stand-up was talking about smoking pot. And he said, I've never seen, you know, a geeked out pothead. It's like, hey, man, you going to pass those Cheetos, you know? But you did people that, you know, so I've never seen marijuana affect anyone where they became angry. But you take alcohol, you take other drugs, and you don't know how it may affect
but
them.
But you can be impaired, though. It can impair your ability to drive.
Absolutely. Especially,
but you're right about the violent side.
Especially with the stuff that I hear that's out there today that would just knock the socks off of probably people like me that might have indulged it many, 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 many years ago. But, yeah, the impairment. But I would say smoking is probably, you know, less harmful than drinking. Yeah?
I don't know about that.
But anyway, I don't know.
I don't know about that. That's not good stuff you're putting in your lungs.
Well, no, I'm... Anyway, so I don't know. But whatever. I mean, it's... But then some people, they say it's a gateway drug. You smoke that and do that. Well, that's not enough. What's next? What's next, boss? What's next?
Yeah, what's after?
All right, so FSU. Taking a step back. Keep on rolling. Get back to being average. What do you think, Chuck?
I think take a step back. I mean, I don't think they go back to being what they were when Norvell first got there. What were they, 5-7, 6-6, but not 12-0? I think, to me, a step back is 10-2, right?
Yeah. I don't think a step back is 10-2. I think 10-2 is about
a small step back.
Maybe, yeah. I guess technically, sure, it's a step back because he went undefeated last year.
It never comes out as you envision it when you look at the schedule for the season. But other than,
We'll get to the schedule. But I got the schedule here, and we'll pull it up and give you the games that we think might be, you know, treacherous. But back to your taking a step back. See, to why I would say 10-2 really isn't a step back. It's like if you're, you know, when Alabama lost two games a couple of years ago, you never thought they'd take a step back. They just had a blip, and you knew that next year they'd roll again. So really, 10-2 isn't a step back, in my opinion. Sure, from a record standpoint, yes, but if it's their 10-2, but the next year they're 11-1 or 12-0 again, well, they're still rolling. A step back to me would be they go 8-4. Getting back to average, oh my gosh, now they won 6 or 7 games, and they were lucky to get 6 or 7.
You don't think 8-4, you call that average? I mean, FSU should have 7 wins when the season starts, guaranteed. So I think that would be taken.
Yeah, but
that'd be 8-4 for them would be average, not a step back. A step back is 10-2, I think. 8-4 is taking a step back.
Okay, we'll meet in the middle, say 9-3. 9-3 is a step back. 10-2 rolls. I'm with you. 8-4 probably, based on the coming off of an undefeated season, would be somewhat average. But when you look at their schedule, and I think they're definitely taking a step back, and they could border on becoming average again. And we'll discuss why, and I touched on it prior to the break, because of the way their team's constructed. Now, they have put together a couple of decent back-to-back recruiting seasons, but their team is still primarily made up, their playmakers, that is, of transfer guys. Guys that hit the portal, and they lost the majority of their big-time playmakers this past year. Johnny Wilson, Keon Coleman, obviously quarterback, right? Trey Benson, their running back. But Braden Fisk, the big defensive tackle. Jared Verse. They lost a lot of production. I mean, a lot of production, man. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, look.
Well, not being consistent.
I mentioned Jordan Travis, right? Jaheim Bell as well. There's a lot of production they lost on both sides of that football.
Being consistent with what you said all during last year when they were going undefeated, you said, well, they better get it done this year because next year is going to be a rough time. So you still think that? Or have you changed your stance a little bit?
It depends because, you talked about their schedule, and you're right. Look, they start in Dublin, Ireland against Georgia Tech.
When?
Have no idea how good or bad Georgia Tech
doesn't matter. They should win that game.
Well, you say that, but you go into Ireland and all the change, the time change.
Well, you know, Georgia Tech has to do that too.
I understand that, but I think though what that does is situations like that always helps the underdog, in my opinion. Sure, they both go through it, but I think it may limit them both a little. But I think it hurts the underdog. I mean, the favorite more than it does the underdog. I do. So then you look, they played Boston College, of course, that's a win. They played Memphis. They played Cal. They play SMU.
That'll be interesting. I mean, I don't know how good SMU's going to be. They were decent last year, right?
Yeah, they were decent.
They got to go to SMU.
That's true. They're not playing at Jerry Ward anymore. They played Duke, and Duke had things rolling with Mike Elko, but now he's gone.
Yep.
Right?
Duke pops up periodically.
So when you look at their schedule, they host Clemson. Right, they play at Miami. They got to go to Notre Dame. They obviously host Florida. So
there's four games they can lose. I think so. For them to go 8-4, they'd have to lose every
losable game.
Yes, and they're probably going to split the lose. I'm at 10-2. There
you
go.
But see, we say there's only four losable games, and again, that's looking at again those helmet stickers, thinking that FSU is what FSU was in the 80s and 90s, and if you forget about. Recent history, and then they obviously. I mean, look, they were. Think about it, they were 3-5 and 5-7 back to back years, and they would have been 3-7 had they not ducked Florida and Clemson a couple of years to the COVID.
Well,
year.
They ducked Clemson.
Okay, but yeah,
but the Florida game there was no option because they didn't play any.
For the sake of this show, I'm going to say they ducked.
No.
Them, okay.
Well, I'm going to say. More than it. The SEC.
Don't let facts get in the way of a good, a good opinion here or a good conversation.
Now, the one that was wrong is when Clemson was already in Tallahassee. It wasn't like the night of or day before.
That's correct.
A little bit of cough here. I can't play this game.
Yeah, that's correct. So this is what Florida State has to hope. Now, and we talked about this in the past.
Didn't they also back out of the Virginia game that same year?
They might have. I don't know. Maybe they did. Maybe they should have been 3-9. Maybe that's why they should have been.
Yes.
I don't know. But anyway, but my point is, just a couple of years ago, they weren't a very good football team. And Jordan Travis played out of his mind. Look, Jared Verse is going to be a first-round draft pick. Keon Coleman, Johnny Wilson, they were mismatched nightmares on the outside at wide receiver. Trey Benson was an outstanding back. I mentioned Jaheim Bell. Braden Fisk is going to be a second-day draft pick. So they lost a lot of production. Then what they have to hope, now they did sign 15 guys in this year's portal. They got 15 dudes coming. Half of them are SEC guys. They rated Alabama's roster. Okay? So now they have 15 transfers, 8 are from the SEC, including Marvin Jones Jr. from Georgia, Earl Little, the corner from Alabama, Malik Benson, the wide receiver from Alabama. Of course, obviously it all hinges on, DJ Uiagalelei. How is he going to be? Right, will he be the close to the consensus number one overall player when he came out of high school? Will he be the average as a day is long quarterback at Clemson? Will he be, just a good quarterback, which is what he was at Oregon State last year? He wasn't great there. He was just good. So what do they get? I mean, look, and he's not the runner Jordan Travis was. Their offensive line isn't as good as isn't projected to be as good this year as it was last year. So what they'll need is to have a ton of production from a lot of these portal players. And here's my question. We've asked this in the past. When you look at some of the other the Jared Verses of the world, obviously I think it was Albany College is where he came from. And then, of course, Jordan Travis, I think he came from Louisville. So a lot of the guys that transferred into Florida State, now Keon Coleman came from Michigan State, which, FSU's better than them. That's sort of a lateral type of a move. But the majority of the guys that produced for FSU were guys that come from lesser programs that went into Tallahassee. Most of these dudes, it's lateral or lesser. It'd be lesser. I would say Alabama and Georgia certainly far superior programs than FSU. Would you agree? Right? So, I would think if you really want to keep a dude outside of a quarterback, because quarterback only one guy plays, but all the other positions, multiple dudes play on a regular basis. So, to me, if Earl Little was a big-time corner, I would think Alabama would find a way to keep him. Marvin Jones Jr., if Georgia thought he could really produce at a higher level, they'd find a way to keep him. So, I'm a little leery, Malik Benson. Alabama certainly needs receivers. If they thought he was a stud receiver, they'd find a way to get those NIL coffers, and they'd find a way to keep him. So I'd be a little leery of the dudes that are taking lateral moves or taking a step down a level as far as transfer guys. And you're not always going to hit it, right? At some point in time, it's going to catch up with you. It's going to catch up with you. And they hit portal gold in back-to-back years, which turned into a ton of production last season. And, again, that's not sustainable, man. I mean, they've had a couple of pretty good recruiting classes as of late, the last 2 years. But I think this is, you know, this is taking a step back, and they're a 9-win team. Now the key is, but can they stack another good recruiting class and keep things rolling? Because that's the key. You've got to recruit well. And he's recruiting better as of late, but his first two recruiting seasons there in Tallahassee, quite frankly, sucked. Mm-hmm. They were no good. And now they've gotten better as far as high school recruiting, that is. So we'll see. Your thoughts, R.J. Saunders, on FSU?
I think FSU is probably coming into this year, whether fair or unfair, with a lot of expectation. I think what they did last year, and they were just, you know, injured Jordan Travis away from possibly making the playoff, maybe winning the entire thing. I mean, when I look at their schedule, I don't know how difficult it is. However, I do agree with you completely about the whole Georgia Tech thing when it comes to, I think, a team going in with high expectations like Mike Norvell is going to have for this team. You may overlook a Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech could surprise you on a neutral field as well as overseas. And then you have, I mean, your first four games are home games. If you can take care of those home games, you can find yourself in a pretty good spot. But
yep.
I think that the challenge is going to be, how do you do against, you know, the games that you think they should lose? How do you look in those games if you're looking to be in the 12-team playoffs? So I think there's going to be a lot of questions surrounding this FSU team, but I do feel, whether fair or unfair, there's a lot of expectations for them as well.
Well, yeah, without a doubt, and I do. I believe it's truly going to come down to the quarterback play they get, because, again, the offensive line, look, you just lost two very, very good college wide receivers. One dude that's going to be playing on Sundays for a long time, Keon Coleman. You lost an NFL running back in Trey Benson. I'm just talking offense here. And your offensive line, again, won't be as good. You lost some guys up front as well. And now you have a quarterback that I think is just okay to good. Hasn't been very productive in college. And he's not mobile. Jordan Travis is going to take off, and the escapability factor was huge for him. So you know what? He checked out when he was under duress. DJ isn't going to do that. He doesn't have the will to do that. So we'll see. I'm interested to see how the season plays out, and I hope like hell they're 6-6. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh yeah, 6-6. I wish they were like 3-9. But hey, we can always hope. Yeah.
But I would trade positions with them as a Gator. I'd much rather be in their shape, their condition, than Florida right now overall. Because I just don't know. I mean, I like what I'm hearing in Gainesville. What Billy Napier is saying. There's one thing though that when I think about. Is somewhat being perplexed with certain things. He made comments here with Josh Payton on On3 Sports when asked about the Gators special teams last year.
I think there's a little bit of perception and reality there, right? There's no question we had some organizational issues on special teams. And we had a couple young players, true freshmen, that made some critical mistakes. You know, we got two threes on the field. We have a punt block versus Georgia. We jump over the shield versus Kentucky. We got a handful of plays where we got 10 on the field. But reality is the stats would say that we were pretty good on special teams. I think we were top 25 in the country in EPA, and a couple of our units are top 10 in the country. So for me, one of the things that we did in the offseason is we added another layer of expertise there. Joe Houston came over from the New England Patriots, and he's joined our staff this offseason. So I feel as if we've addressed some of those things.
Yeah, so hey, let that marinate for a bit, and we'll break here. And we'll come back, and I'll ask Chuck first about what in the hell did Billy Napier just say, and the believability there. That more at broadcast to you from Yale House in Templeton on 1010 XL.
Compton and Company on 1010 XL.
And welcome back to the Yale House in Templeton. Glad to have you along with us. Talk with you until 2 o'clock today. We're on the FM side, Orlando Magic basketball on the AM side. And go ahead and gloat a little bit, Chuck. Go ahead. Go ahead. Dad, go ahead and tell him. Early in the week, he called me up, and he said, what? What? We're doing what? Go ahead.
Yeah, so I called Ron probably about 2 weeks ago now, because on the 1010XL website, like once or twice, you know, it has a show schedule on there day by day, and I kept seeing Orlando Magic banner pop up, and it would say like 1010 and have it on there. I called Ron and said, I didn't know he had Orlando Magic. Oh, what are you talking about? I've heard that anywhere. Blah, blah, blah. So, and I would see it again.
Is that how I sounded?
And see it again. And so now, today, when I heard it's Orlando Magic basketball, I'm like, all right, finally, we have Orlando Magic basketball.
How about that?
But it had been advertised, but nobody seemed to know about it except for me.
Is Orlando Magic postseason?
I guess that's because a hacker, today. Maybe. Maybe they did it.
So, RJ, you're a Lakers fan, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Give me your chances of beating the Joker.
Oh, man, that's going to be an uphill battle because he's just so good. And it seems even when you play your best defense, he still finds a way to slither right through the defense and make an incredible basket or an incredible pass. It seems that there are a lot of members in the media, though, that really think this is going to go six or maybe seven games, and that maybe Anthony Davis and LeBron James may have found a chink in the armor. However, for me, I'm saying if this goes five games, you know, I think the Lakers should probably take that win and just go off into next season. Ron, they're saying that they're going to go big game hunting, and Trae Young may be a name that they'll go after this off.
You can have season. They can have him. give me D'Angelo and let that, us yeah. And yeah, you know said, and be another trade. Player or something. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So. We'll definitely see with that series there just how the Lakers are able to do. I mean, game one tonight at 8:30 in the Mile High City. I don't think it's going to be easy for LA.
All right, here's another question for you, man. I told you we get the NBA talk, Chuck.
I was going to say real quick, is there anything when you hear game one of round one of the NBA playoffs, you're like, does that excite you at all? Because you're like, all right, only 2.5 months to go before we reach the end of this.
It does to me when you have certain matchups. Certain like this. Again, Denver Lakers excite me. I'll be locked in. I'll watch every game. Yes.
When it was best of five in the first round, it was halfway okay. Now it's everything
so
is
my,
seven.
So my question for you, RJ, you being the Laker, I'm sure you're a big LeBron guy, right?
Oh, Kobe. No, LeBron. No LeBron.
Okay. You know what? I respect that. And you know, did I ever tell you my older son wishes he wouldn't have got it now? I'm responsible for my older son being a Lakers fan. Me and Ronnie one day were out in the driveway and, you know, playing basketball when he was like 6 or 7 years old. And he said, Dad, who's the – because he loved eating up with sports like me at a young kid, watch sports. He goes, Dad, who's the best NBA basketball player since Kobe Bryant? And so he started following Kobe Bryant, the Lakers. And he became a Lakers fan. And one of my greatest sports memories I've shared with my kids is – he and I was sat and watched Kobe's last game.
The 60-point game.
The 60-point game, and that was a lot of fun. A heck of an experience to share with him. He's got a 24 tattoo on his bicep.
Oh, that's so cool.
You know, but now he's like, man, he said, I wish I would have got it smaller. It's a big old 24, man. It's that big old 24. But he loved Kobe, and so I guess. If I asked you the LeBron Jordan argument, what would you say, RJ Saunders?
I mean, I give Jordan, you know, the edge over a guy like LeBron James. It doesn't take away from LeBron James being a great player, but I think just what Michael was able to do in the era that he was in and able to be so dominant in the era that he was in. I mean, he cost a lot of guys NBA championships, from Patrick Ewing to Reggie Miller and other guys like that, Charles Barkley. Yeah, he costed a lot of guys NBA championships who are Hall of Famers because of the dominance that he had. And I just feel that Michael Jordan really is responsible for making the game a global game as well. Without Michael Jordan, I don't know if the game is is as global as it is. So for that, Michael Jordan is definitely the GOAT in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I would still say Michael Jordan. What dude does at 39 years old?
Incredible.
It's unreal. He and Tom Brady, like they defy logic.
Where's he going next year? Where are him and Bronny going to be?
I don't know. They'll be together. I mean, I'm guess. Look, they'll do whatever LeBron says. I think he's going to finish a Laker. I think they'll probably draft Bronny in the second round, and he'll be a Laker, and they'll maybe trade for Trae Young or whatever. But I would say this. If the Lakers find a way – I don't think they will, but if they win the NBA championship this year, I would say that might catapult him to the front of the line.
Yeah, if he go from a seven seed and beat the defending champions and go all the way to the finals, it's going to be hard to really like argue with LeBron stands at that point. It's
I think it would. Easy to argue. I mean, so you're saying what they would do in one play?
Because a lot of people point to the rings. The number of rings.
He'll still be behind, right?
I still think people are going to take away from LeBron the fact that how many times he lost in the finals and then the team hopping. I just feel like NBA, purists are going to say, like, we don't respect the team hopping that he did. Jordan didn't do it. Barkley got traded, so he didn't team hop until his last go-around with the Houston Rockets, but – Ewing didn't team hop to try to go chase rings and chase championships. So I think that's why people would put Jordan over LeBron forever, that being one big reason.
And I get that. I get it completely. But I would say that the most impressive championship won by either was by far and away down 3-1 to the 73-9 Golden State Warriors. And he brought them back to win a championship. That to me is more impressive than anything Jordan ever did in the finals.
That was impressive.
Down 3-1 to the team that tied the Bulls for the best record in NBA history.
I think they had it by one game.
No,
right?
You're right. 72-10, 73-9. So the best record in NBA history in the regular season. You come back down 3-1. You win the finals. And this is coming from a guy that's not a LeBron James fan. I just have to respect the dude for what he's done. But good points made by you, RJ, in terms of the team hopping, the teaming up, and also Jordan preventing Hall of Famers from winning NBA rings of their own. So back to for the break, we played the clip by one Billy Napier with Josh Pate on On3 Sports in terms of special teams, and all of us Gator fans would just shake our heads, roll our eyes. He mentioned the multiple number threes, the many a times. They had the largest variance from numbers of players lined up on special teams in the history of college football. They had as few as 8, I think, at one time, as many as 14 one time. So they were hey, you know what? I don't know. Hey, do you want to run out there and try to block this kick? Do you want to go out there and return a punt? Sure. What number you wearing? Oh, it doesn't matter what number you're wearing. Maybe the officials won't catch us. I mean, that's what it was. It was just a cluster. You know what? The entire year, and so Napier pointed out that when the time they jumped over the wedge against Kentucky, that all the different things they did. But then, on average, our average was pretty good. Well, hey, Billy, stats for losers. Okay, when it comes to stuff like that. It's all about the eyeball test, and the eyeball test says you guys are terrible on special teams. So what does he go do? He decides to go out and they were terrible on defense as well. Offensively, they were good. They were really very good offensively. The problem is you didn't hire a special teams coach. Sure, you did bring in Joe Houston, a longtime NFL special teams coach. The problem is he can't be on the field during the game. He's not your special teams coordinator. He's got to be up in the press box or somewhere else during the games. He can't be on the field. So now all you've done is, okay, during the week we're going to work with stuff, but the in-game stuff, live bullets, this dude can't play a part. So what he's done in hiring Joey Houston and hiring Ron Roberts to be like the assistant coach or the head coach of the defense, assistant defensive coordinator, he's gone out and hired babysitters. Instead of maybe parting ways with guys you should have parted ways with, he's instead created more layers in different positions and adding babysitters. Not a fan of that at all. And that's something Steve Spurrier, when he alluded to a few weeks ago when they asked about Napier. I like him, good guy, people that talk to him, interact with him, they love him. I hope it works out, but sometimes you can pretty much have too many chiefs, you know. And that might be what they have down there. And he's also said he's going to continue to call offensive ball plays. That's another clip. We didn't play that he's going to do in Gainesville. He's going to be the coordinator. I think their offense is fine. Their offense wasn't the problem last year. The problem was the in-game management. We mentioned the special teams. We mentioned, you know, it seemed like 3 or 4 seconds ago, we're clap, 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 trying to get the playoff. Procedural penalties. Well, if your focus is calling ball plays as a head coach, you can't have as good of in-game management as you would typically have. That's what's going to hurt. I think the play calling will be fine. But if you promote Russ Callaway to offensive, you know, co-offensive coordinator, and their talk was last year, he called a bunch of the ball plays. Let him call plays, man. You know, trust the guys you hire to coach, and then you focus on the in-game management stuff. And maybe you can dot I's across T's a little better. That's all. I mean, it's hard to do it all, man. It's hard to do it all. And he's trying to be involved in too many things, I believe, on game day. Your thoughts, Chuck?
Yeah, and I don't – it's funny that would even be a case because don't they have the biggest staff in college football? So it sounds
– Well, see, it's not about – yeah, they have a huge
right,
staff.
Right, but if you think someone –
if you think
someone's
going to
have the most assistants, that means your mindset is that I want to, you know, delegate and spread things around and not be a control freak. Be someone is I want the fewest number of assistants possible.
Well, what he does – well, this is what he does, though. What he does, he'll have – it's almost like – in private school, public school. The old private school, public school. Now, private school classes are damn near, some of them are as many kids as you have in public schools. But it's off the field, you know, position groups. He'll want to have, like, one coach per just a couple of players, you know, to kind of, you know, as far as you know, from a coach's standpoint, coach him up, you know. I'm okay with all that's fine. I'm okay with all of that. That's fine. But then on the field, he doesn't want to do that. Off the field, okay, during the week, you know, Sunday through Friday, hey, man, we're going to have all these coaches do all these things. But on game day, it's all me. No, man, that's not it, Billy. That's not it, in my opinion. All right, we'll break here. We'll come back. We've got birthdays. We've got on this day in sports. We've got history made in Gainesville, Florida. Somewhat history made last night in Cobb County, Georgia. We've got poll questions that are out there. Also, some early Heisman odds as well. We touched on, you know, spring game. FSU has theirs today. That and more. I'm going to broadcast you from the Ale House in Tinseltown on 1010 XL.
Next Thursday night in Detroit for the countdown and for the draft. In your wildest dreams, could you imagine your first live event post-coaching, maybe, you know, in the year off of coaching, being with a bunch of idiots like our particular show? And why did you agree to do this with us? We are so incredibly thankful.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to it. It's always draft day, draft weekend's always an exciting time for everybody, for the teams that are building their teams and for the fans and for everybody involved in it. So, you know, it's a great event, and yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it, you know, from the other side. It'll be fun to be in Detroit, you know, be with you guys and get your expertise.
Compton and Company on 1010XL.
I mean,
well,
You know what? If you played that soundbite and we didn't know who it was, and say, Ron, you get 20 guesses as to who that is. I don't know that I would ever guess Bill Belichick.
Well, and one thing, we just play a snippet. If you go on YouTube, watch the whole thing, you get a chance. He's like talking about, oh, yeah, we did this, and we thought we did this. He's like, he's excited. He's talking fast. And I'm like, this is the most amazing thing ever. And Bill Belichick at press conference.
I don't know. We're on to
on to Pittsburgh.
I don't know. But
we're on to Pittsburgh.
It's crazy.
We're on to Pittsburgh. And then we'll be on to Jacksonville.
So how about his piece of garbage former owner, Bob Kraft? Okay.
Well, is he right? Sam Kennedy asked him back.
It doesn't matter. Look, Arthur Blank, pretty much he calls you, inquires about Bill Belichick, and you say, don't hire him. He's trouble. He's more trouble than he's worth. Really? Really? He won you 6 rings, and that's the loyalty you're going to give him? Hold on. Piece of garbage. Hey, the only thing I know about Robert Kraft is he'll stop by every massage sign that's got a neon light on him. That's all I know about Robert Kraft.
Well, is this debate still going on? Is this debate still going on, Brady Belichick? I mean, I thought now you put Belichick in the old Phil Jackson spectrum of, well, anybody could have done that.
No, would I say that?
Come on, Al.
Was that more? No, and I'll maintain that's more Brady than Belichick. But Belichick was a fired coach at Cleveland, but he did take the Browns to the playoffs one year. From a loyalty standpoint, man. I mean, look, you were together for a lot of years, and Bill Belichick, the front office guy, got Bill Belichick, the coach, fired, or mutual parting of the ways, or whatever you want to call it. But come on, man, you don't bury your coach. He's a dude that you fought with for many a years, and just to say, he's unhireable. Don't hire him. Come on, man. That's just no. You don't do that. More loyalty to Arthur Blank than you do the dude that won you 6 rings.
I've got good news for you. The good news I have for you is that who's not going to listen to Robert Kraft? Jera. Because after this year, McCarthy will be history, and Belichick will be your coach in Dallas come 20.
That's fine.
25.
That's
okay, fine. That might be working out best for Cowboys.
It's fine. Speaking of.
Because I said that's the one I got.
You know what you did? You just brought me back to a topic that I wanted to talk about. We're certainly going to go on this day in sports, and I almost had to pull your card from you.
I thought about it for a second.
Oh, man, did I ever almost pull your fandom card.
That's why I didn't get on to you for why are you talking about FSU crap on this guy's birthday, his coach's birthday.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Who would you rather have as your quarterback right now for your team in the state of Florida? Graham Mertz, DJ Uiagalelei, or Cam Ward?
I'd say Cam Ward, I'm guessing.
I would say Mertz.
You take Mertz over Cam Ward?
Yes. Cam Ward was okay.
He was the most sought-after quarterback in the country portal.
You know what? I guess I look at the season Mertz had last year.
Mertz was okay, but he was just wasn't a lot of dink and dunk.
He
even brought up a stat that the length his passes traveled was.
I did bring that stat up. I did.
So it's very low.
I did, but.
He was okay. He was serviceable, but
I would take Graham Mertz. But I'm sure you could certainly argue the others. But I guess where I was going with that is what I was going to say. Both those guys are both like Heisman watch and have Heisman odds, and Graham Mertz is nowhere to be found.
Well, would you expect Graham Mertz to be?
I mean, I guess maybe they're mentioning them because both have cupcake schedules and may play for a team that could possibly go to the playoffs.
So let's take the Gator Hurricanes out of it. Is there any coach in the country that say, yes, I want Mertz over Ward? You think any coach in the country would say that?
I would say yes. Yes. The dude, it wasn't all dink and dunk last year. He made a bunch of big time throws too, and the guy was tough as nails, man. Played banged up.
He's tough.
He'd get a hit. It reminded me of Danny Werfel back in, you know, that 96, 95, 96, when he'd get the hell beat out of him and just get right back up.
The echo of the whistle.
Echo of the whistle. Bobby Bowden said we play the echo of the whistle is what we do. But, so Dak Prescott, let me ask you a question. How much money do you think Josh Allen, not the Jaguars Josh Allen, but the other dude Josh Allen, makes annually for endorsement deals?
Well, you would think right away in Buffalo it would be pretty low.
Well, I'm just so what would you say?
$3 million. I'm just taking a shot without thinking about it much at all.
Yeah, you know what? You're
I don't
close.
Know what's good. I don't know what's good or bad.
No, you're close. You're close. You're actually $4 million a year.
Okay, not bad.
No, it's not a bad guess at all. How much money do you think Dak Prescott makes annually in endorsement deals?
What does he endorse would be my question. But when I'll ask that question, I'll answer that question, I'll say $12
million. That's actually exactly the way he made in 2022 annually.
How was it?
Yep.
Really? That's yep. just a total guess.
Yep. $12 million.
But what does he million, does he do like local Dallas million. Car dealerships?
No, he does Beats. He's Jordan's. He's remember he did like what was it, the Chunky Soup?
Mm-hmm.
He's done a bunch. But here's where I'm going with that is, see, he's pretty much got the Cowboys bent over a barrel in terms of his contract, right?
Well, the problem is he's a pretty good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback. He's not franchise quarterback.
Well, where I'm going with this, and you could structure these contracts that make it really look like someone's getting paid a lot more than they are. You can backload contracts. You can incentivize contracts. You just look – if you were to go look at some of these receiver contracts, like Tyreek Hill and the likes of these huge deals they supposedly got, they're nowhere close to what the numbers that are reported are. But so with Dak Prescott, if I were the Cowboys, if I were Jerry Jones, I'd say, Dak, if you really want to be a Cowboy – And you really mean you want to put the Cowboys in a good spot? Because he's come out recently and says, look, I don't necessarily have to be the highest paid quarterback. Well, you shouldn't be number one, Dak. And, you know, we'll kind of let the season play out and we'll just kind of see where we are. Well, if I were the Cowboys, I'd go, Dak, look, we'll give you 4 years, max value of $200 million, and guarantee you $160 million of it. And then I'd incentivize the rest of it and put some fluff money in there as well. Because here's the reason I brought up the incentives. If he were the quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, he probably wouldn't get $1 million a year because he's just a good quarterback. Josh Allen is a MVP caliber quarterback every year.
I know Josh Allen's in that Razor commercial.
Well,
like
I know, but my point is,
right.
is
but I was trying to think
if
what he's
making $4 million a year in Buffalo and he's an MVP caliber quarterback, if Dak Prescott was a quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, he might make $1 million a year in endorsements. But he's making $12 to $14 million a year in Dallas. I'd say Dak, bro.
So
if you were here, you're in Dallas, okay, you're only making $50 million a year, but – If you max everything out, otherwise you might make 45. But guess what? You're making another $12 million a year in endorsements. If you're a quarterback of the Buffalo Bills or the Packers or even the Steelers, you might make $1 million a year.
All right, so you know I love sidetracking you. Sidetrack is the greatest thing ever, right? With me to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So while we're talking about money, I got to ask you three options here. The biggest story of golf this week. A, here's your three choices. A, did the LIV Tour just throw the Rory, make that totally up? B, did he agree to it and change his mind? Or C, did they have conversation and he never agreed to it? Because they reported that he was about to sign for $850 million and a 2% stake in the LIV Tour. And he's like, no, I never wrote that up. You know, I never did that. So you think there were discussions? Or you think LIV just threw it out there? As like they say LIV just threw it out there to take away from the attention on the Masters.
D all the above? I don't know.
All the above?
I mean, I think a little.
I mean, that was like a breaking news story Monday or Tuesday.
Fire, right?
They were saying he was about to sign, and that was like crazy because, like, wow, Rory McIlroy, who was the number one anti-Liv guy, all of a sudden is going to Liv.
The only reason I would say that there might be some validity there is the fact that the stance that changed, you know, from the PGA Tour, and oh, now we, you know, we're softened a little bit, and you know, the narrative is a little different now. You hear people flipping over and, man, oh, we're going to coexist, we're going to do this.
So, I thought they were supposedly merging.
Well, that was talk as well. So that's why it wouldn't shock me if there were something to it. I don't know though.
But what I didn't understand.
You know what? Guess what? You know what stinks for golf? No one really cares.
Well, here's
seriously, nobody really cares because
here's the funniest thing. You know, I can't stand Tiger Woods, right? You know that. This is well documented. Mm-hmm. However, they said Scottie Scheffler looks like someone that was created by AI. It's like the ultimate great boring golfer, no personality, the anti-Tiger. Great golfer, but just like, yes, I'm just here to win golf tournaments. That's all he is.
That's kind of what Jordan Spieth is going to be had he won, because he had no personality either, if I'm thinking right. But again, what stinks, and it stinks for golf, is no one really cares. For the most part, no one cares about the McIlroy stuff, other than your A golf fans. And I feel bad because the Masters, I'm a guy that watches most majors, and I really enjoy the Masters. I don't think between the Masters and the Players, I might have watched an hour total.
Well, what happened Sunday was it looked like the last 9 holes being great, and Scheffler just took off, and there was no drama in the back 9.
We'll take one final break. We'll come back and we'll
talk about birthdays.
We'll revisit the poll questions, find out one more time where they stand, and then on this day in sports and birthdays, we'll close this out at the Yellow House in Tinseltown on 1010 XL.
This is Compton & Company on 1010XL.
And welcome back to close it out from the old house in Tinseltown. It is Compton & Company. Glad to have you along with us. Our pre-draft show, the draft's Thursday. One final look, RJ Saunders, at our poll questions, and then we'll finish the show on this day in sports and some birthdays on this day as well.
Absolutely. So we had two questions today brought to you by All Site Contracting here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Question number one being, do you think FSU will keep things rolling this year, take a small step back, or go all the way back to being an average team? Right now leading the clubhouse with 36% of the votes, FSU is believed to take a small step back. And our bonus question: if you're the Jags, which of these players would you take at number 17? Terrion Arnold, Brian Thomas, Brock Bowers are the best offensive linemen available, and leading the clubhouse by a mile is Terrion Arnold at number 17.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, again, as we said earlier, I think it's a small step back for FSU as well. But be careful, Florida State. You've got to continue to stack these recruiting classes because it's not sustainable to – win championships by working in the portal. There's a reason. I get it. There's money involved, but there's a reason some of these bigger boys like Alabama and Georgia let these guys go if they were really that good. I mean, they got 6 transfers between Alabama and Georgia coming. So be careful, right? Be careful. I hope they're not careful.
But you're not going to be disappointed. Is the most disappointed team in a draft going to be a team to take J.J. McCarthy? I mean, why does anyone think that guy is going to be a good
NFL quarterback? Well, we'll see. I mean, again, he's a wild card, a huge wild
That's
card.
That's a wild card,
He is, but, yeah, it is. It is the wild card of wild cards, I believe. But, yeah, but so if it should be, you know, again, be careful. You've got to stack draft class. Recruiting classes. You win through recruiting, then you add in the portal. It should be just the opposite. It's not the Jaguars. You build the draft and add free agency, and they've done just the opposite. But at least FSU, you know, they went undefeated last year. The Jaguars are still working. All right, so on this day in sports, there's some good ones, Chuck. On this day, how about this? In 1912, both Fenway Park and Tiger Stadium opened.
Yeah, they opened up a few days after the Titanic sank.
And they both won one-run games in their home openers. How about this? On this day in 1939, Ted Williams hit his first Major League Baseball home run. His first hit. And it came off of Yankees Philly future Hall of Famer Red Ruffing. Never heard of Red Ruffing, but okay. I'll take the word for it. This date, 1941, the Dodgers started to wear liners in their caps.
All right.
And how about this? How about I called Chuck earlier in the week and said, hey, what happened on this date in 1877?
Jeez.
Catcher started to wear a catcher's mask. I'm thinking to myself, well, damn, before 1877, what did some of these catchers look like? Did they look like hockey players? They had no teeth? I'm like, what?
I know back then they didn't throw 100 miles an hour, but can you imagine
still,
behind the plate, all you got in front of you is a glove. If you don't catch it, guess
what?
Well, no,
it's not as much that as the foul ball. Foul
that's
tips.
Even better.
That's even worse.
Yes, even
that's
more
even worse,
concerning.
Chuck. My goodness. How about this? How about this? This date in 1943, I didn't know Casey Stengel managed the Braves, but I guess he did. He got hit by a taxi, broke his leg.
What'd you say about Casey Stengel? Huh?
I didn't know he managed the Braves.
Yeah. Yeah, he's first manager of the Mets, by the way, in 62.
How about this? In this date in 1944, the NFL legalizes coaching from the bench. That means they had to coach from their house?
Dr. Daryl Bruger was like, crap.
How about, I guess I really am old. Like, I thought I remember Bill Shoemaker as a jockey when I was a kid. He won his first race in 1949 on this date.
I thought he was winning races like the 80s.
I thought so, too. In this date, 1967, Tom Seaver won his first game. And beat the Cubs 6-1. Oh, boy, baby. This is a good one. This date, 1982, the Hotlanta Braves, who
13
I don't know how they're doing it right now.
13-0.
That's not what this is.
Oh, 82?
Well, I'll get there in a second. They won again last night. Travis d'Arnaud became the first one of three catchers in Major League Baseball history to have three home runs in a game twice. You want to guess the other two?
So catcher had three home.
That's last night was the second time Travis d'Arnaud had three home runs in a game.
Not necessarily Brave. You're saying the other catcher. Your first answer is going to be like you would think either Johnny Bench or Mike Piazza.
Well, Johnny Bench and Gary Carter.
Oh, okay, that's a good guess. Okay.
Not a bad guess. In '82, the Braves became the first team to win the first 12 games of a season.
About to go 13.
And then the next day, obviously,
seven
five
or
in a row.
Okay,
5-13-5, and they got screwed in the postseason when they rained short in the playoff. They were up after 4 2/3 at Busch Stadium against St. Louis. They were up, and it was a rain delay, and they called the game because of rain. They didn't restart it.
I was going to say, who was the pitcher, like Bob Forsh or somebody like that?
I don't remember. This date, 1986, Michael Jordan sets the NBA playoff record with 63 points in the game. Baltimore Orioles in 88, off to the worst start.
They started 0-21?
Yeah, but it was 0-14, which set the record. But, yeah, it ended up going
0-21 right starting.
Pete Rose, 1990, pled guilty to hiding $300,000 in income. What, did he bury it in his mattress or something? What did he hide in his mattress? 1996, Chicago Bulls win record 72 games in a season. Did you know they played a baseball game in Hawaii?
In what?
In Hawaii. Did you know that?
A major league game? A regular season game?
First baseball game in Hawaii, 1997. Cards beat the Padres.
I don't remember that. I don't remember
I don't either. This date, 1997, Mark McGwire is the fourth home run on Detroit Tigers left field roof. The others are Frank Howard, Harmon Killebrew, and Cecil Fielder. What do those guys have in common? Those other three guys, they didn't do steroids.
We don't know what they did.
Frank Howard, that's old school. Harmon Killebrew, Cecil Fielder, I can promise you they didn't do steroids. And then some birthdays. On this date, 1945, Stephen Orr Spurrier.
The greatest Gator in history.
The greatest he is. I'll
give you okay? Well, most people argue me and say it's Tebow. I'm like, all right, when Tebow coaches and wins a national championship, then come back and talk.
One thing Urban Meyer once said, he goes, if there were never a Steve Spurrier, he would have never coached in Gainesville. So if there were no Spurrier, there might not have been a Tim Tebow. The Tebows might not have become big Gator fans if it were not for Steve Spurrier and the run he had.
And Mike Shula might still be at Alabama.
That's true. That's true, because Tebow would have gone there. He might have gone there. This date, 1961, Don Mattingly was born. How about Don Mattingly's another one that's not a Hall of Famer?
Yeah.
He and Dale Murphy are the two omissions that make zero sense. Six-time All-Star, nine gold gloves, three silver sluggers, AL batting champion 1984, AL MVP in 1985, Dale Murphy back-to-back MVPs. And he's not in either. These are the two huge, huge omissions in the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. This date 1970 when Allen Houston, a sharp shooter who went to Tennessee, played for the Knicks and the Pistons, was born. Any other good ones? Any other good ones, Chuck? Anybody? I don't think so. There's no other good ones, Chuck. So when we, as the music plays, RJ, man, hey, I'm glad you sat in this week, man. It was nice catching up.
Absolutely.
Welcome back to the 1010XL family.
Yes, sir.
As music plays, when we're sitting here next Saturday, and we're talking about the
fourth
three
or fifth round of the draft.
Talking about the first three rounds of the NFL draft, and rounds four and five may be done by the time we're here. Will we be speaking glowingly of the Jaguars, or be the man, not again?
Who knows? We don't know.
But what do you think our opinions will be next Saturday?
Hope they have Brandon Ayuk. Then I'll say success.
Then you'll say success. All right. So for fine folks here at the L House, for RJ Saunders, who did a great job producing, for Chuck Elliott, I'm Ron Compton. Till next Saturday, see ya!